Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcher List podcast network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcher List's bullpen expert, Rick Graham. Rick, it is July 3rd, but by the time this podcast is posted, it will be the 4th of July, Independence Day. Got any big plans? Are you a big fireworks guy?
I knew this was going to be the question. I was going to even ask this question if it wasn't. But not really. I guess now at my age, I'm not too big on the whole fireworks thing. I know I'm surprised there hasn't been any. I haven't heard any tonight, to be honest, because most of the towns around me, they do like July 3rd fireworks shows. Same. Also a dog owner now, and I'm terrified of her. Yeah. Hearing fireworks because, yeah. But yeah, not a big firework guy. How about you?
I mean, the dog question was definitely going to be my follow up because I know that you're going to be your first 4th of July with the dog. So hopefully that goes too well. I wouldn't say I'm a big fireworks guy. I totally appreciate them. I've seen enough in my time. I'm the type of person that I'll probably just like climb a mountain and see all the fireworks rather than like go to a show or something. Yeah. But we'll have a little party on Saturday. My grandma's throwing a party. Nice. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah, my girlfriend has to meet my grandparents for the first time, so we'll see how that goes. Should be a blast though. Not super patriotic myself, but hey, you know, gotta support the country you live in. I guess, you know, honestly, I'm just happy we get a day off from work because we rarely get days off.
I got 2 days off. I got today off and tomorrow, so I'm excited for that.
Lucky. I get 5 days off all year. 4th of July is one of them. So I sort of look forward to it a little. So I'll be happy to sleep in a little bit, have a day off tomorrow. But we are here to talk relievers, and we're coming off the release of the All-Star Game starting lineups, or at least the starting position players, which I always think it's so weird how they segregate position players and pitchers. They're like, the fans can vote on the hitters, but they don't know enough about pitching to vote on the pitchers.
I know it is kind of annoying that you don't get any. Yeah, the pitchers are just strictly up to the staff, right? It's the players might
players
get, a
get
vote
to vote a little, right?
Yeah, the players and the staff. Yeah, but it's still annoying.
Yeah, it's definitely sort of weird. But hey, we will take a crack at predicting which all-star relievers we'll see in the game this year. We'll take a shot at predicting 6 in each, the AL and the NL. Both of us will do the same. We've already entered in our answers, so those are locked in, and we'll see who is going to be closer, who's going to be right, who's got the better predicting brain. But we'll start it off, as always, with our news and notes from the past week, jumping right in to the bad news with the injuries, as Fernando Cruz was placed on the 15-day IL with a high-grade oblique strain. Oblique strains are already really difficult. They usually have extensive recovery timelines, and the fact that this one is a high-grade strain and is also a I think the second IL stint for Cruz this year, I'm expecting him to be out for quite a while, probably 6 to 8 weeks or something. So that's pretty unfortunate. In a corresponding move, Jeff Hartlib was recalled from the minors and then subsequently DFA'd to make room for Clayton Beter, who was recalled from the minors. He's pitched pretty well there as he transitions from being a starting pitching prospect to a relief prospect. Beter, between high A, double A, and triple A, pitched to a 2.14 ERA. He's walked a lot of batters, so he's got a 1.29 whip, but a 39% strikeout rate. So clearly some strikeout potential there. And it's honestly like a perfect replacement for Cruz, a right-hander with poor control, but big strikeout stuff.
Yeah, it's their best option at the moment. And it's like, I mean, there's both New York teams, we'll talk about the other New York team later, but both New York teams are definitely going to have to add at least one bullpen arm, it looks like, if not more, at the deadline. With this Cruz injury seems like it's gonna keep him out at least through the end of probably close to the end of August, early September, the earliest. So Mark Leiter's been struggling really bad. He's been pitching terribly lately. So after Devin Williams and Luke Weaver, who have also had a little bit shaky series here, I mean, everyone on the Yankees pitching staff has struggled against the Blue Jays in this series. It's been personally fun to watch as a Red Sox fan, but I can't talk too much. So, Yeah, I mean, Cruz is a huge hit to them. I guess Ian Hamilton kind of steps up, or Jonathan Loaisiga, one of those two guys, need to step up and be like that secondary setup option for them, at least until they go out and find some help.
Totally. All right. Our next injury involves Michael Kopech, who was placed on the 15-day IL with knee inflammation. He had just returned like 2 weeks ago from a season-spanning IL stint. So it's been a pretty unlucky season for Kopech. I wouldn't say for the Dodgers, though. They've got plenty of luck, especially in that bullpen, having acquired Will Klein earlier in the year. And they called him up in a corresponding move to join that bullpen. But I think the Dodgers bullpen will survive without Kopech, but yeah, been a tough year for injuries for that whole bullpen, and especially for Kopech, but sort of exciting to see what Klein's going to do in his first shot with the Dodgers.
I don't have the numbers, but he looked pretty good with the Dodgers so far, of course. I don't know what type of role he's going to be able to carve out. I know Edgardo Henriquez has already started his rehab assignment, so he might be up soon. To add to, Yates is still healthy and Trinan's working his way back. So, and of course, it's the Dodgers. They're going to add at least one bullpen arm before the end of the month. So, but yeah, Klein is definitely on my radar because we've talked about him pretty much everywhere he ends up. This is his fourth team in 2 years now or something. But yeah, still an interesting relief prospect, and the Dodgers have been known to, turn players' careers around, especially out of the bullpen. So yeah, Klein's an interesting name to follow, especially he's gotten off to a good start with the Dodgers so far.
Yeah, and it looks like he'll have plenty of opportunity right now because there's so few established right-handed pitchers out of that bullpen. Like, it's basically Kirby Yates and then everybody else is injured. Right. They're relying on Lou Trevino for five holds so far.
Yeah. I know. And Trevino's been fine, but I don't think that's not a long-term answer for them. I think they're going to definitely try to upgrade that. But yeah, the left-handed side's fine. That's why I didn't mention Vesia or Banda even has been pitching better lately.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they could certainly add a righty depending on, either way, even if Trinan comes back healthy, I feel like they still could use one more righty in that bullpen.
All right, next we have Keegan Aiken of the Orioles, who was placed on the 15-day IL with shoulder inflammation. Unfortunate, but it did make room for Yennier Cano to be recalled from the minors. We discussed at length his optioning last week. He's been one of the most unlucky pitchers this year and has actually been pitching, honestly, better than he has in the past couple of years. So I'm excited to see him back in that bullpen and hopefully into high leverage situations soon. But Keegan Aiken had been pitching really well this year, was one of the top left-handed options. So Gregory Soto is only going to see more high leverage opportunities in Baltimore.
Yeah. And Aiken had been pretty good. Not as dominant as he was last year, but still solid for them. And now, yeah, Soto's the only lefty in that bullpen. Pen for now. I don't know. Did Cano pitch at all in AAA?
I didn't even check.
I don't know. Either way, it was a very quick stint, and yeah, he came back and pitched yesterday for them. So, I think Sir Anthony Dominguez and Soto and Baker are still above Cano. But yeah, I know Baltimore and Atlanta still haven't really made their mind up, I guess, for what they're going to do with the trade deadline. They both sound like teams think they're not going to sell off pieces, but they both should consider selling off at least their rentals. Like,
yeah,
Soto and Dominguez should be traded. And then that opens up a door for Cano and Baker to kind of be the setup guys behind Felix Bautista. And that doesn't kill the Orioles' chances next season. It just, like, you can get a really good return for Soto and Dominguez. And same with the Braves. I'm sure they could get a really good return for Rossell Iglesias. Even with his struggles, they'll still get a good return for him. So, yeah, we'll see. That Baltimore bullpen, though, I don't think Bautista goes anywhere. But, the rest of it could shuffle around by the end of the month.
Totally. Looks like Cano made two appearances in 10 days at AAA. Yeah. So they were definitely sort of letting him take a little break there, which I think will be good for him in the long run. And our last IL placement involves Dedniel Nunez, who was placed on the 15-day IL with an elbow sprain. In a corresponding move, we saw a bunch of transactions in the Mets bullpen. Austin Warren, Rico Garcia, and Justin Hagenman were added to the active roster. Nunez had spent a lot of the season in the minors, but was working his way into high leverage situations on the backs of last year's impressive breakout and some better performances as of late, but now he'll head to the IL with, as I mentioned, an elbow sprain, which is very concerning.
Yeah, he had just started. He looked like his 2024 self the last couple outings. And he was working his way into a 7th-8th inning role with House. You know, Reed Garrett struggled lately. Oscar Brazoban struggled lately. You know, Ryan Stanek struggled all year. I don't really know what they're next, what they do. I mean, Jose Buto's, I guess, an option, but he hasn't been getting a ton of holds. He's pitched well, but yeah, they're really, like I said, the New York teams are going to be very active in the relief market, I would imagine, this deadline. The Mets definitely need a top. They need like an 8th inning guy, but in front of Diaz for sure. So they'll probably, I think like a Aroldis Chapman could be fun, that just going to the other side of New York. I don't know. They'll be an interesting fit for them. And as a Red Sox fan, I do like a lot of, they have some pretty good pitching prospects at the AA, AAA level. So I think there could be a match there, but yeah, the Mets bullpen without Nunez and then elbow sprain after all he's dealt with. I mean, that's not good. So unfortunate, because Nunez was so fun to watch last year, but yeah, it's probably keeps him out for a while, if not the rest of the season.
You think the Red Sox are going to be sellers?
They should. But also given like Jim Bowden off the Athletic put out an article 2 days ago where he asked 40 major league executives who's most likely to be traded at the trade deadline, and the consensus was Aroldis Chapman would be the one the most likely traded. So I mean, it makes sense. Even if the Red Sox are contending, I would still trade Chapman because of the return in a seller's market. You just can't pass up that return for a team that's not going to go anywhere if they make the playoffs anyway. They're still a year or two away anyway. And Hicks, I think they're really banking on Jordan Hicks being the closer here moving forward, given his contract, and he's not likely to make any starts because, even though there's, you know, the starting rotation isn't very good, there's still some depth there that, you know, it doesn't make sense to push Hicks into the rotation. He's better off in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. I think it makes too much sense. They should trade Chapman. The return for him should be just too good to pass up.
It feels like he's on the trade block every single year. So I guess that's a pretty easy prediction for Jim Bowden there. I'm not going to give him any credit.
Basically, but... yeah.
All right, let's move into our transactions. We'll move into our transactions. We'll start with Forrest Whitley. It's a quick one. DFA'd once again. It did not pan out in Tampa Bay as we had hoped. I said last time he was DFA that would be the last time we talk about him. And then we said, but unless he gets picked up by the Rays DFA'd him. I think this will be the last time we discuss Forrest Whitley. Do you have any parting words as we say goodbye to Forrest Whitley?
No, I mean, it's at least, I guess, it sucked. It's not great that he got DFA'd, but at least he's staying with the Rays, and he didn't, you know, I guess it would have been worse if he just kept going from team to team, but at least he gets to stay in the Rays system. Hopefully at AAA, they're able to work with him now that they, you know, they don't have to worry about him throwing major league innings. They can get him right, hopefully. I don't know what the future holds for Forrest Whitley, but if he can stay healthy and, you know, maybe he becomes a factor next year.
Fingers crossed. All right, we'll move next to Juan Burgess, who was recalled from the minors by the Mariners. He's pretty interesting at AA and AAA this year. Burgess has produced a 0.62 ERA across 29 innings. That comes with a 0.59 whip and a pretty solid 28% strikeout rate. Zach Pop was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. But Burgess is pretty interesting. Probably not going to be in high leverage situations anytime soon, but he's relatively young and could get a shot in the future at being one of the top relievers in the Mariners bullpen.
Yeah. Pretty deep bullpen, and you know, there's not a chance for him to get into the high leverage role right now, but yeah, interesting minor league numbers, still in his mid 20s. So someone to keep an eye on. You know, if they have a rash of injuries or whatnot, but yeah, I'd imagine he's up for probably a limited time. They've been Mariners, even though their bullpen's been good, they've also been linked to a lot of relievers potentially. So, yeah, could see some moves made by them in this month.
All right. And similarly in the AL West, but in a bullpen with a lot more opportunity, Jose Fermin was recalled from the minors. He pitched a little bit earlier this year, but he's been incredible in the minors at AA and AAA, 3 ERA across 15 innings, 1 WHIP, but a 45% strikeout rate. And as I mentioned, solid in the majors as well with a 33% strikeout rate and a 3.65 ERA. And with Hector Neris being DFA'd, that's even just more reason to suggest that Fermin's going to get some high leverage opportunities. And right now, outside of Kenley Jansen and with Ryan Zephyrjohn's recent struggles, Fermin may be the top right-handed option in LA.
Yeah, I mean, Zephyrjohn's just completely imploded over the past month. So yeah, I mean, Fermin, yeah, with no, I mean, Hunter Strickland's there, but come on. It should be Fermin's job as the top right-handed setup guy with Reed Detmers, which is intriguing considering that this Angel, I keep forgetting that the Angels are like playing well and like in the playoff hunt. So, you know, if they kind of just don't do anything at the deadline, I mean, Fermin could be in line or whatever that happens with Kenley Jansen. I mean, Fermin could be in line for saves there eventually. So, yeah, he's one of the more interesting relief prospects on my radar right now, given opportunity. And he is, I mean, he's got good stuff. He throws upper 90s, 33% strikeout rate in 12.1 innings at the MLB level. So, I mean, he's proven it at the MLB level and obviously in AAA as well.
Yes, and he's only 23 too, so he's got plenty of room to grow and improve as well. So pretty exciting there, Jose Fermin in LA. Next, we have Jordan Hicks, who is activated from the 15-day IL. He had been out for quite a while with toe inflammation and obviously was dealt from the Giants to the Red Sox while he was injured. So he'll return. Zach Kelly was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And I wouldn't be surprised if Jordan Hicks quickly becomes a high leverage option there. His stats on the season aren't great, 19% strikeout rate, 6.44 ERA, but we're all familiar with how insane Hicks stuff is if he can throw it in the zone.
Yeah, and if he throws it out of the bullpen where, you know, he's throwing 100 plus. Mm-hmm. He looked pretty good his first time out. He pitched the eighth inning. I think there was a 4-run game, so it wasn't exactly like a setup high leverage role situation, but giving him the eighth inning, his first game back, was interesting to see. And with how poorly Greg Weisert's been pitching lately, I think Weisert's going to get either demoted or have an IL stint. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like the door is wide open for Hicks to easily be that top setup guy, if not be the closer when or if Aroldis Chapman gets traded. So I guess the only real, like, we don't, Justin Slayton was added to the 60-day IL, so he's not going to be back for a while. And Garrett Whitlock has kind of been used more of a longer, you know, longer stints than just, so I don't think they would make him the closer. So, yeah, I think Hicks, you know, Hicks is a guy I would consider stashing. Probably too early to start stashing trade deadline, you know, situations, but Hicks is a name to keep an eye on for sure.
Okay, next we've got Eric Sabrowski, who is activated from the 60-day IL by the Guardians. He had been out for most of the season with elbow inflammation. Zach Kent was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, but Sabrowski was pretty exciting last year, put up some really good numbers in the minor leagues, and then came to the majors and did not allow a run, struck out a bunch of batters, so we were both really excited about what he could do this year, but then elbow trouble sort of kept him out. But he's back, and looks like he could quickly become the top left-handed option in Cleveland with only Tim Herring standing in his way.
Yeah, and he's, I mean, the upside between him and Tim Herring is like not even remotely close. Sabrowski's definitely got Herring beat there. I strikeout rate's already, I mean, it's only been a couple out, two outings, but he's already got a 37.5% strikeout rate. We talked about him. I remember we talked about him last year because his fastball IVB was really, really good. I think it was like 19 inches or something. I haven't checked what he's done so far, but yeah, Sabrowski's one of my favorite, he was one of my favorite deep sleeper setup options this year. until the injury. So now, as long as he's healthy and he looks pretty good so far, I have him, you know, as someone to keep an eye on in that bullpen, especially, you know, Cade Smith's been dealing with some injuries. He's got some back spasms and hasn't pitched in a while. And Hunter Gaddis has been imploding the last couple weeks. So there's definitely openings in this bullpen.
Yep. All right. Next, we've got Tyler Ferguson, who is optioned to the minors by the A's. He has started the year off with a significant role in the A's bullpen, but then really struggled as of late. I think he was optioned to the minors with an ERA over 6, but Justin Sterner was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. He started off the year really strong with the A's and then sort of started falling off. They sent him to the minors where he barely pitched. So I think they were sort of trying to give him a chance to rest up, but Sterner is back up. And honestly, the setup options in Oakland have really, in Sacramento have really shifted around a lot there. Outside of Mason Miller locked in that role, we've got guys like Michael Kelly, Sean Newcomb, and now Justin Sterner returning as like the top setup man. Newcomb hasn't had a hold yet, but he has been one of the top left-handed options there. And it's interesting to see Michael Kelly so quickly return to being a high leverage reliever in for the A's. So it's not a great bullpen, and that sort of gives Sterner the opportunity to reclaim his role pretty quickly.
Yeah. For what they have now, I mean, it's been obviously a trying year for this whole pitching staff and the bullpen, especially. They do have some interesting, Jack Perkins, I don't know what his role is going to be, but, you know, Elvis Alvarado throws 100, but his ERA has not been great. Sterner can definitely get involved in this mix, but I don't, there's no one here that I'm particularly excited about from a holds league standpoint. So still kind of ignoring this bullpen, or just, you know, watching it, but not making any moves right now.
All right. Next, we've got Jimmy Garcia, who's activated from the 15-day IL. He missed quite some time with a shoulder impingement. Mason Flaherty was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And right when Jimmy Garcia returned, he was thrust into a high leverage situation and ended up blowing a save. Not a great return to the mound for Garcia, and he's got tons more competition now in that Toronto bullpen with guys like Yariel Rodriguez, Brendan Little, and the oft-mentioned Braden Fisher. So I still think Garcia's going to be counted upon as a high leverage guy, but maybe not the go-to guy as he was prior to his injury.
Hmm. Yeah, I was trying to figure that out today doing the holdup article. Yeah, so they brought Garcia into the eighth inning yesterday, protecting a two-run lead. So that's what his role was before the injury. So it's good to see him go right back into it, despite the blown save. But, he let up a two-run homer to Aaron Judge. Like, how many people haven't done that? So, it's true. I'm not too worried about it. Stuff looked fine. They let him throw 34 pitches in his first outing back, which is kind of ridiculous. But yeah, I still think he's the top setup guy there. You still have Yariel Rodriguez probably as the sixth or seventh guy. Brandon Little, sixth or seventh guy. Fisher is going to mix in too. Bullpen's still really deep. And it's, even like losing a guy like Flaherty, who was pitching really, really well. I mean, his ERA wasn't great, but like the, metrics were suggesting he was, getting unlucky. So he's only 23. He'll be back eventually as their second lefty, I would imagine. This bullpen has so many options that, they could afford to kind of send him down and let him get work at AAA.
Yes, pretty privileged there in Toronto. Next, we have Edwarniel Nunez, who was recalled from the minors by the Padres. He's pretty interesting at AA and AAA, 2.70 ERA across 30 innings with a 1.07 whip and a 42% strikeout rate. He is 26 years old and already made his major league debut yesterday. Do you have any interest in Edwarniel Nunez? Not from like a fantasy perspective, but just as sort of a relief pitching prospect.
Yeah, definitely as a prospect. Because I don't think he probably doesn't last too long in the majors unless he just kills it there. There's command control issues. His walk rates are not pretty, But yeah, the stuff's electric. You know, fastball in the upper 90s, because that's every relief prospect these days.
Yeah.
And yeah, he can get a lot of swing and miss. So just another name in a really deep Padres bullpen to keep an eye on. I mean, even like, who is David Morgan throwing 98 for the?
I saw him the other day too.
What's going on? Like, it's just out of nowhere. I mean, yeah, they're just a lot of riches there for the Padres as far as their bullpen is concerned. So,
a lot of riches.
Rich
Hill.
Rich, not Rich Hills, but guys who throw 99 plus, unlike Rich Hill.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Next, we've got Daisbell Hernandez, who was activated from the 15-day IL. He had been out for a few weeks with forearm inflammation. Kevin Hergett was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, but Hernandez was one of the top setup options in Atlanta prior to his injury. I'm not sure he's going to jump right back into high leverage situations. A, because other guys have established themselves a little bit, like Dylan Lee and Pierce Johnson, with Hernandez out. But on top of that, Hernandez's underlying metrics aren't great. He's probably the luckiest pitcher in baseball so far, and the Braves probably realize that a little bit. So they may keep him out of high leverage situations. However, he still got a 2.13 ERA and 7 holds on the season. So I wouldn't be surprised if pretty soon he's back in his previous role.
He's a 1.9% K minus walk. That's so, it's just so funny that he's got the ERA. Yes, but we'll probably pitch in a middle relief for now. Again, we don't, people keep saying that the Braves aren't going to sell off pieces, but I don't, they're 7.5 games out, 8 games now, actually, maybe. There's 6.5 games out, and Schwellenbach and Saylor out. Strider's not the same dude. I mean, just move off move off Ozuna and Iglesias, and you know, regroup for next year. But yeah, we'll see. But if that does happen, if they do move, and Pierce Johnson could go too. So if you lose Iglesias and Pierce Johnson, then yeah, Daisbell works his way into potentially some sort of closer committee with the lefties there, Dylan Lee and Aaron Bummer, if Bummer stays.
Totally. All right. Next guy who's probably going to be on trade blocks everywhere, Andrew Chafin, was activated from the 15-day IL. He'd been out with a hamstring strain. Ryan Lutos was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And even if he's not traded, he's still likely to be one of the top left-handed options. I know Jose Ferrer has the most holds in the Nationals bullpen, but it's crazy to me because he's got a 5.40 ERA and he's not striking out a ton of batters. So Chafin may get some more hold opportunities moving forward, and he's definitely going to get a lot of calls from other teams in terms of trade opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably be more interested in Andrew Chafin, honestly, than Kyle Finnegan, just because he's a lefty who's got a pretty long track record of getting lefties out. But yeah, it's been a nice find for the Nationals. And yeah, they're probably hoping he just gives them a couple good weeks before they can ship him off for some low-level prospect or whatnot. But yeah, he's been good so far. I don't know if he's much of a fantasy asset in holds leagues like he used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's good to see him pitching well at least.
Totally. All right. And lastly, Zach Agnos was recalled from the minors by the Rockies. Angel Chavilla was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. I only mention this, obviously, not for fantasy relevance, as A, the Rockies already have a closer in Seth Halverson, and B, I don't want to roster any Rockies relievers anyway, but Agnos had been factoring in to save opportunities prior to his optioning. He racked up 4 saves and 3 holds. 5.48 ERA and 13% strikeout rate aren't really exciting, but it's more about the usage here with Agnos. So I don't expect him to be back into save opportunities, but it's interesting to see him back up.
Yeah, he throws hard, but can't get any swing and miss. So especially at Coors, that's not, you know, if you're not missing bats, you're not going to have a good time. So his strikeout rates are a little bit better in the minors. I mean, they are better in the minors, but it's not anything like to get too excited about. So yeah, I can't, and Seth Halverson's been good enough in the closer role that I don't think Agnos is much of a threat to him moving forward.
And even still, it's like they're not going to go to Agnos next when Jake Bird is doing so well. But hey, it's the Rockies. They'd probably just go to Tyler Kinley instead.
They would go to Tyler Kinley next because Jake Bird doesn't have one save despite them having like seven dudes with one save.
Yeah.
And not one of them's Jake Bird, who's been their best reliever.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. All right. That will wrap up our news and notes. Next, we'll move into our three up, three down section. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham discussing relief pitchers. We're heading into our three up, three down section as we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. Let's start it off with the guys who are rising, beginning with Ronnie Henriquez, who continues to get save opportunities in Miami while Calvin Fauché continues to struggle. And Henriquez has got each of the past two Marlins saves. So that's pretty exciting. I mean, I just feel like such a genius for calling this one just so long ago. It's just such a weird one to call too. But Henriquez has been so good this year, and we're really just waiting on him to get opportunities. And now he's getting more and more opportunities with his competition going away.
Yeah, I mean, Fauché has been very streaky lately. So yeah, it looks like Henriquez now that, so Henriquez has the three of the, his three last outings, Henriquez has picked up a save. Fauché has one save, I think, since like June 4th or something. So it's looking like I don't want to call it too early, but I think Henriquez might be the actual closer here. Because he should be, because he's their best reliever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this maybe this ends up being if it's like a Will Vest situation, that's at least better than just a full blown committee with Fauché mixing in every now and then. I feel like the White Sox were kind of having a full blown committee, so something like that wouldn't work. But if Henriquez is getting, you know, the Will Vest treatment, then he's definitely someone to look at in pretty much all leagues because he's going to help you with strikeouts. His ratios have been very good. The walk rate's a little bit of an issue, so the WHIP does get a little high there. But he's still better than a lot of other relievers or closers. So yeah, looking forward to Henriquez. Hopefully, just, taking complete control of this closer role for the second half.
Yeah, I am excited for that. And I saw that you picked him up in our home league last night.
Yeah, I had him before. And then I thought, because I was like, all right, he's going to finally be the closer. And then Fauché started closing out games. I'm like, all right, this is kind of. And then, yeah, I was surprised. I was usually people, relievers like that in that league kind of get snagged. But yeah, I was happy to pick him up again. And he gets a save today. So nice.
I had a claim on him last night too. So
did you?
You?
I put a dollar. Yeah,
it was the prior. Oh, yeah. Well, that does it. That'll do it. I should have gotten him last week.
Yeah.
Okay. Next, our next riser, and we'll go back to the Rockies bullpen, is Seth Halvorsen, who continues to be the clear cut guy in the ninth inning for the Rockies. He's been serviceable, not nearly as good as he was last year, but he's been much better over the summer than he was to start the season. I know to start the season, he was really unlucky and was walking too many guys, but now he's sort of locked in and seems to be locked into the closer role as well.
Yeah, he got it. Or I don't know if he got a save. I think he got a save today. It was a little bit shaky. I saw most of it. I mean, he was kind of letting up some weak hits, lucky hits. I still, considering the other options in that bullpen, I'm glad that they're kind of just letting him run with the role, because that's, if one of those guys in your bullpen is going to be your closer long term, it's going to be Seth Halvorsen. So like, let's get him, acclimated to the role. And they're using him as the single closer there. Roster at your own risk, I guess, with any Rockies reliever. But he's been fine since June began, 2.53 ERA, 1.03 WHIP, 19.5% K minus walk rate. I mean, we'll take all that. He's actually been, so his splits were interesting. I was looking at him like, all right, is he one of these, like, is he just doing all his damage on the road? His ERA is lower on the road, but he has a 1.58 WHIP and 10.5% K rate on the road, and a 1.30 WHIP and a 30.1% K rate at home. So he's getting like all of the strikeouts at home. And the WHIP's better at home too. So interesting. Maybe he is someone who can, fight through that Coors effect. And I would like to see his strikeout rate be better, especially on the road, because that's where it's been hurting. But, we'll take what we can get from a Colorado closer, I guess.
Mm-hmm. You definitely want your closers to be better at home, especially in Coors, but like any reliever is going to make more appearances at home than on the road.
For sure. Right. Well,
all right.
Yeah.
Our last riser is Grant Taylor, who's a rookie for the White Sox. He's quickly established himself as the best reliever in that bullpen. His ERA got a little bit inflated on Wednesday as they tried to get five outs from him against the Dodgers, and it didn't go too well in the ninth inning. But Grant Taylor has looked really good. They're entrusting him in multi-inning saves as well. However, he's not a clear-cut closer, as they like to use him as a high-leverage option from time to time, throwing like the seventh and eighth and stuff. However, he will get the majority of the saves for the White Sox moving forward and is clearly their best reliever.
Yeah, I feel like that would have been if he were able to finish that game off. I think that would have been his third save in four outings. So it does look like he is, at least like we talked about, like their Will Vest, where he's going to get the mm-hmm. majority of saves, but he might also work two innings. He might work the eighth and the ninth. He might work the seventh and the eighth one game or whatever, but he should get the majority of the saves there. He's their best reliever. I know Steven Wilson has a good ERA at 1.65, but like they don't think any of that's trustworthy. And the rest of the bullpen is very underwhelming. So, yeah, this should be Grant Taylor's job. And maybe he gets late. Maybe it's, let's think, Michael Kopech for the first half of last year, where he was borderline roster worthy. Like you weren't getting a ton of saves, it was very spotty, but you were at least getting, you know, some strikeouts and mostly good ratios from him throughout the first couple months. So if Taylor finishes the year as in that type of role, maybe he gets to 10 saves. But yeah, I don't know, between these three, I picked these three for a reason. I think there's clearly, you know, Ronnie Henriquez is the top option. And then between Taylor and Halverson, it's kind of a toss up where, you know, Halverson, I feel like, is a little bit more safe there, but Taylor has some more strikeout upside. And I just don't know what the White Sox are going to do with him as a rookie and what his role will be moving forward. But it looks like he's their closer. And so I'm kind of excited for that.
All right. Well, I agree with that. And as those guys rise up the closer ranks, others need to fall to accommodate them. So we'll look at our three fallers this week, starting with Robert Suarez, who is still the closer in San Diego and is tied for the major league lead in saves. However, his ERA has inflated as he's become more hittable. This was definitely a concern we had last year, and it never really came to fruition as he sort of just was lucky throughout the whole year. And we thought at the beginning of the year that maybe the changeup would allow him to offset those issues, but he's been getting pummeled recently and now has an ERA over 4 and a strikeout rate under 26%. Still the closer, but not super elite as he appeared to be earlier in the season.
Yeah, I think the Padres need him. I don't know if they will, but they need to move on from him as a closer. They just have too many. We talked about their other options. There's even like a guy like Morgan's been pitching well, but I mean, Suarez is clearly their like fifth or sixth best reliever. I don't know if you go with a straw. I mean, Morahone's been their best reliever over the past month or so, but obviously Jason Adam and Estrada are very safe and very sturdy. They've been pitching well. But yeah, Suarez over his past eight outings has been very, very bad, to put it. I mean, 16.88 ERA, 3.73 WHIP over his past eight outings. He kind of got lucky yesterday for some bad base running bailed him out. So yeah, I wonder, he just needs to be shut down a little bit. I still think that they could trade him, even though the Padres aren't going to be sellers, but maybe you trade him for an outfielder and another, some team struggling outfielder, so you have someone to play in left field consistently. I don't know. But yeah, there's no need for Robert Suarez to be the closer when he's struggling this badly, and they have so many good options behind him, elite options behind them. Like, not even, yeah.
Yeah, no, they don't need to be relying on somebody like that. But I think maybe there's the idea that we have all these guys to set up, but they have so many guys that, like, Robert Suarez is maybe their fourth best reliever, maybe even worse than that with David Morgan
at establishing best. Himself. Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Well,
so we'll see what happens. Yeah,
we will. We will. Next, sticking in the NL West, we'll discuss Camilo Doval, who continues to fall. I think this was sort of inevitable considering he has doesn't have the same strikeouts that he has in years past, and he's been pretty lucky thus far, but he blew up on Wednesday night and hasn't had too many save opportunities in general and hasn't been making the most of them when he has gotten them. I also feel like at some point they just got to give Randy Rodriguez a chance. He's just so good.
Yeah, they got to take the training wheels off and just kind of let Rodriguez fly as long as he's healthy, as long as he feels good. Like, let him get the ninth, and at least you have that shut down, and you still have good eighth inning options and potentially Duvall. Obviously Tyler Rogers, and I mean Ryan Walker's been pitching better too lately. So since getting the closer role, Duvall has been he's kind of fallen apart. He's been mostly fine. I think he only has one or two blown saves, but he's still like it's just been very sketchy when he is getting saves. So I don't know how much longer they're gonna. Again, this is another situation similar to San Diego where it's like you don't need to do this every night with Duvall as your closer. You have really good options behind him that you can try, you can trust. So yeah, that's why I'm concerned with Duvall. I guess he blew the save the other night, but he got the win and let him pitch the next inning. I was like, okay, I guess. Interesting, but yeah, we'll see. They still have a lot of faith in Duvall, so there's that.
Yeah, that is nice, I guess, maybe just for Duvall. It's not great for Giants fans or fantasy managers, but yeah, a good graces, I guess, go a long way for Duvall. Our last faller, I guess, is Dylan Lee. He's still pitching really well this year, but it looks like the Braves still feel obligated to throw Raisel Iglesias in save opportunities. So in this weird period where they've got somewhat of a closer committee, it seems like Raisel Iglesias has emerged still the favorite, where it seemed like Dylan Lee might be able to establish himself there. He sort of missed that opportunity, and I don't feel like he's going to get another one this year unless Iglesias is traded.
Yeah, that's, I think, what's going to happen. And it's kind of just bad luck for Lee that they didn't have any save chances when he was kind of the ninth inning guy. And now it seems like they've shifted back to Iglesias being the ninth inning guy. And they were down 4 runs in the ninth today, but they still gave Iglesias the ninth. And that might not mean anything, but it might just be like, all right, we're trying to work him back into the ninth. And over the weekend, Iglesias pitched after Lee, too. So I feel like Iglesias has given them enough, you know, good outings in a row where they're comfortable putting him back into that closer role. So and Lee had his first meltdown in, I think, it has been a while for Lee since he allowed any runs, and Tuesday was rough for him. Facing a bunch of righties too. So it was the middle of the Angels order. That might've been why they used him in the eighth inning. I don't know, but I think Iglesias is going to end up getting the next save chance, whenever that might be for the Braves. But yeah, if he does get traded, then Lee definitely jumps back into being a potential, you know, pickup, because I would still trust him over anyone else in that bullpen to close out games.
All right. Well, that will wrap up our 3 up, 3 down section. To recap, our risers were Ronnie Henriquez, Seth Halverson, and Grant Taylor, and our fallers were Robert Suarez, Camilo Duvall, and Dylan Lee. Next, we'll move into our main topic as we attempt to predict the All-Stars relief pitchers. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. As I mentioned, we are going to predict the All-star relief pitchers. We're going to do our best. It's always really hard to make that balance between who should make it and who's going to make it, because a lot of times the voters aren't as well versed in advanced statistics as we are, and they sort of see save totals and they just get the big hard eyes and they're like, oh my gosh, a closer, he deserves to be there. So let's run through these lists that we've put together, see where we differentiate, see maybe who might have the best predictions. I assume that we're probably going to be pretty similar on our predictions. That's usually the case. We think very similarly when it comes to this kind of stuff. Maybe that's why they put us on a podcast together. But let's start off with the American League. I didn't go in any particular order. I just went through division by division. So I don't have like a number one guy and a last guy on the list. But who's your first American League relief pitcher all-star?
Josh Hader. I think he's the, I mean, that's a pretty easy one. Mm-hmm. American League is definitely easier. It was definitely easier this year, especially when it comes to closers. There's like a pretty clear cut three or four. Then it gets interesting. And in the NL, it's kind of like Edwin Diaz and then toss ups. But yeah, I mean, Hader's the easy one. He's mm-hmm. been amazing this year. Best closer in baseball. So yeah, he's definitely going to be there.
Yeah, I also had Hader. He's got a 1.86 ERA, 24 saves, and a 40% strikeout rate this year. What do you make of him not getting the save on Wednesday? It was really weird that Bennett Sousa, pitching on back-to-back days, got the save over Hader. I don't think like his role's in jeopardy or anything, but it was weird because Hader hadn't been overused recently. I know they were pitching in Coors, so maybe they didn't want to send him back-to-back days in the high altitude.
Yeah, and you know what? I would have to look. I wonder what, like how often he's been pitching on back-to-back days.
Uh-huh. Probably not too often, I would assume. Did we lose you? Well, looks like Rick is frozen. I'll keep it going, and he'll probably sync up with me very shortly, and I'm sure this is going to sound really great recorded in post. But that's Josh Hader. Next, I've got on my list Aroldis Chapman. Chapman, I think, is a very obvious one as well. Really weird. I thought Rick might be joining back by now, but because he'd been going in and out all day and then would sync back up with me. Okay, there he's gone. So he'll be back with us shortly. I think it makes it much easier knowing that he's not in the room and I'm just like not like talking over him, but we're just not synced up Wi-Fi wise. So Rick should be back shortly. You know, hard to sync us up when we're so far away. Rick is on the East Coast, I'm on the West Coast. So you never really know, especially if there's any sort of internet issues, stuff like that will happen. But yeah, Josh Hader, really great this year. And then Aroldis Chapman is next. And I can see Rick's list too. So I know that he's also got Aroldis Chapman next on his list. And as we mentioned, the American League is a little bit easier to predict. So I think Chapman's pretty obvious. 1.29 ERA on the year, 15 saves, and a 39% strikeout rate for the Southpaw. I wonder how many All-Star appearances that is and when the last one he had was, because Chapman is, you know, somebody that's been around for quite a while. He's a 7-time All-Star. So this would be his 8th All-Star appearance if he were selected, and it would be his first since 2021. So Chapman definitely reestablishing himself in the majors, which is very cool. I'm very excited to see him back. Oh no, we've flip-flopped spots. Now I'm Rick Graham, and this is my co-host, Jake Crumpler. let's see. I don't even know how to fix it now. I think it's too late. But nonetheless, we are going to get Rick back shortly, but we talked about Aroldis Chapman. There we go. I can see him now. But that's Aroldis Chapman. Sorry. Next, I had Will Vest, who we have mentioned quite a bit already today as somebody who's been in a committee in Detroit, but he's clearly the top reliever there. Welcome back, Jake Crumpler. How you doing? Still a lot of internet issues. You are in and out. That is unfortunate. But now you're putting a bad look on my name too. That's really not fair because, you know, I'm over here with, I think, fine internet. I can't see outside of my own perspective, but you know, now you're putting a bad look on the name Jake Crumpler right now. That's unfortunate, but yeah, dang. So sorry bad. About the, why oh, there so we go. Bad. I think we're sort of linked up now. Nope. Well, hey, I will say this has never happened before. So we've done 126 episodes with like no internet issues thus far. So I think you got to give us a little bit of break, especially because we haven't been doing a live podcast for that long. But we are shortly. Rick's gone again, so I'll just keep moving through. Will Vest is my next pick, and looking at Rick's list, he also had Will Vest. Will Vest has been dope. 2.37 ERA, 13 saves, and a 28% strikeout rate on the year. So that is another guy that we predict to be an all-star in the American League. Pretty surprising, too, as he was somebody that probably wasn't rostered in the majority of fantasy leagues prior to the season starting. But then we can move on to Yoan Duran. We both got Yoan Duran as well. Look, we're linked in mind, but not in Wi-Fi. So, I can just do the whole podcast and I'll just have Rick upload his thoughts to my brain because we're just that synced up. But Yoan Duran has been incredible this year. Not a lot of saves, so it's possible that hurts him a little bit in the All-Star voting. I know we're not voting. I mean, for the players and the managers that will be voting on that. But Yoan Duran has been pretty unhittable this year. 1.64 ERA, 27% strikeout rate, and 13 saves. Honestly, it really just looks like that ERA is carrying him. But I think it's deserved. Duran is pretty dope. Next, I put Andrés Muñoz on here, and I think that is a universal selection as well. Rick is also going with Andrés Muñoz, and Muñoz has really slowed down. At the beginning of the season, he was like leading baseball in saves and was looking untouchable. But in recent months, especially in June, I think he recorded like one or two saves only. So pretty unfortunate from Andrés Muñoz. Nonetheless, he's pitched so well throughout the whole year that he definitely deserves an all-star placement. Muñoz has a 1.13 ERA, 19 saves, and he struck out a third of the batters that he's faced this year. And to wrap up the American League, I put Carlos Estevez, and I think that was more of a prediction of who's going to make it rather than a prediction of who should make it. Estevez has a 2.02 ERA and a 21% strikeout rate, but he's also got 23 saves, which is second behind Josh Hader in the American League and is third in baseball. So I think Estevez is probably going to get a lot of love from voters this year. However, I don't think he's somebody who should necessarily be an all-star, and I think that is reciprocated by Rick as well, because we both mentioned Brian Abreu of the Astros. I put him as my honorable mention, as I only put closers on there, but Rick had him as his number six option, and I think that's totally fair because Brian Abreu has been overshadowed by the best reliever in baseball and Josh Hader, but that doesn't mean Abreu shouldn't deserve some love in the All-Star game. Abreu has a 1.59 ERA and 21 holds on the season already with a 37% strikeout rate. I'm going to do a quick glance and determine whether or not he leads baseball in holds. He does not. Abner Ribe's got 23. That's probably leading baseball, but still, that probably means he leads the American League in holds. And I think that deserves some love for the All-Star game. So Brian Abreu, definitely somebody that should be joining the All-Star game. So that's going to wrap up the American League. Actually, Rick's honorable mention was Steven Okert, also of the Astros. So he's suggesting that there could be three Astros relievers that make the All-Star game this year: Hader, Abreu, and Okert. Okert's been incredible. 2.35 ERA and a 35% strikeout rate, but just one save and five holds. So he's not really in high leverage situations too often for the Astros, but he's been pitching really well. And I guess Rick is a big fan of him. I've told the story on the podcast before, but when Okert debuted for the Giants, I looked at that and I said, I remember turning to my dad and being like, he's my new favorite player, because I watched him debut and I was at an age where I thought, if I can see somebody debut and watch his whole career, maybe he could be my favorite player. So that is something that sort of stuck with me with Steven Okert. Even though he didn't really establish himself with the Giants, it's cool to see him having a lot of success this year. And that really should wrap up the American League. And I will, wax poetically just a second longer as Rick attempts to rejoin the podcast. But to recap the American League, we had Aroldis Chapman, Will Vest, Josh Hader, Yoan Duran, and Andrés Muñoz, and Brian Abreu, all those guys we both agreed upon. And then I threw in Carlos Estevez, and Rick had honorable mention Steven Okert in the American League. So those are our predictions for the American League relievers All-Stars. Let's move over to the senior circuit, the National League. And I think we are on a similar page, but not an exact page. Edwin Diaz, as Rick mentioned prior to losing his internet, is the clear one, maybe the only clear one in the National League, that there's just no doubt that he's going to be an all-star this year. Diaz has been incredible, 1.91 ERA, 17 saves, and a 38% strikeout rate. Honestly, one of the best seasons of his career. Not going to top that 50-plus save season he had back with Seattle, and probably not going to top the, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, where he had like a 50% strikeout rate. Not those heights, but still, Edwin Diaz, sub-2 ERA, 38% strikeout rate, is pretty unmatched. It's pretty difficult for him to top that, or for anybody else to top that. So both Rick and I have Edwin Diaz as a clear closer in Queens. The next guy I have on my list is Daniel Palencia, and that one is not reciprocated by Rick, but Palencia's been really good. He's got 10 saves on the year as he's established himself as the closer on the north side with a 1.74 ERA and a 29% strikeout rate. It's been really cool to see Palencia take off after pretty much being somewhat of an unknown name, especially if you're not somebody that listens to relief pitcher podcasts, or at least records one like I do. But Palencia has been somebody that I've watched all year because he's on my home league team. So I'm rooting for him everywhere. I also put Ronnie Henriquez on my list. I think that's just a little bit biased from me. If you've been tuned in all year, you'll know that when we were sort of predicting dark horse closer candidates, I mentioned Henriquez in like March as a dark horse for the Marlins bullpen, but it was really only because I thought that there was a possibility that the stuff that I saw while playing with him in MLB The Show would translate to success in the majors. Like, it was such a it was a weird prediction because there was nothing supporting it. It was such an unsupported decision there to suggest Henriquez could be the dark horse, really just saying I played with him on MLB The Show and his stuff was nasty. It's not even reflective of his stuff in the majors, but nonetheless, there was something there. There was some inkling, some frequency that I tapped into and was like, you know, I'm seeing the future there. And Ronnie Henriquez, with just 4 saves and 11 holds, I still think he's been great. 2.85 ERA, 33% strikeout rate. And can you even think of another Marlins player that deserves an all-star selection? Maybe like Kyle Stowers or somebody in the rotation like Edward Cabrera, but I can't even think of anybody off the top of my head that is super deserving of a all-star spot. So maybe Henriquez gets that for the Marlins. I also placed Emilio Pagan on mine, and Rick reciprocated that as well. Pagan has really found a lot of success in Cincinnati, which is not something we expected for a guy who was super home run prone throughout his career, going to one of the most home run prone ballparks in Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. But Pagan has survived thus far with a 3 ERA, 18 saves, and a 32% strikeout rate. It's been pretty fun to watch from Pagan. He looks like he is headed for a all-star selection this year. I also threw Tanner Scott on here, and this is one that was sort of hard for me to say because, you know, hard for me to root for Dodgers in the first place. But in the second place, I don't think this is one where Scott is deserving, but it's the Dodgers, and it feels like he's going to be selected anyway because the whole team is going to the all-star game. I know fans don't get a vote on the relief pitchers, but it does feel like there's going to be some sort of MLB bias towards getting as many Dodgers in the All-Star game as possible so we can get viewers out there. So Tanner Scott, 3.46 ERA, but he does have 18 saves and 7 holds, which has got to be one of the largest totals amongst save plus holds guys. I think it's right up there. That's 25. And there's few guys with 25 save plus holds this year. Scott has also got a 28% strikeout rate. But as I mentioned, he's the closer for the Dodgers. Like, he sort of has to be in the All-Star game this year because of how much love the MLB has been showing for the Dodgers this year. The last guy I had on my list was Robert Suarez. He's sort of doing all he can right now to take away his ability to be an all-star this year, as he's struggled mightily in recent games. And we've discussed him as a faller on Rick's closer ranks, but he does have 24 saves, which currently leads the National League, as well as a 4.04 ERA and a 26% strikeout rate. I think those saves might be enough to get him into the all-star game. I don't think he's super deserving, as I don't think saves are really the biggest indicator of the best relievers. And there's plenty of setup guys, even on the Padres, that have been much better than Suarez. But can you really count out the National League leader in saves in the All-Star game? I don't know. Maybe someone will surpass him in the next coming weeks, but I'm sure the voting has already been submitted and everything, and we're likely going to get answers on our predictions in the next week or so. So we'll see with Robert Suarez. I also had an honorable mention of Randy Rodriguez of the Giants, and Rick has him on his list, not even as an honorable mention, just as a straight up all-star. And hey, I'm not going to argue with that at all. He's a Giant, and he's also been incredible this year. 0.72 ERA, 38% strikeout rate, one save, 12 holds, but that ERA has been, I think, the best in the majors for as many innings as he's pitched. And I'd love to see Randy Rodriguez get some opportunities in the ninth inning for the Giants. But nonetheless, he's been so incredible this year. Definitely should be in the All-Star game. And I think I will continue to go through Rick's list and talk about the guys that I didn't mention. And we've got just four out of, that's most of them, that's out of seven. David Bednar is one of them. I considered him for sure. I think if I had taken more time to do this, I would have probably locked into David Bednar. I know Rick said he spent like 2 hours on his, so he's probably very upset that he's not able to be here and talk about it, but maybe we get him back in the next few seconds if his internet locks in. But David Bednar has been great this year. 2.73 ERA, 12 saves, 35% strikeout rate. He has locked back in after struggling mightily last year, and it's been great to watch. So I'd be excited to see David Bednar in the All-Star game. I'm always rooting for the Yinzer Supreme. I think the next one we'll talk about is Shelby Miller. And I also considered this one. It's just when I was doing these, it was more predictions rather than who I think should be in the All-Star game. And I think there's something about Miller having only 10 saves that may hold him back. But hey, I put Ronnie Henriquez on here, so what am I even talking about? Shelby Miller's been dope this year. 2.04 ERA, 10 saves, 8 holds, and a 28% strikeout rate. So definitely deserving of an All-Star appearance. We'll see if that comes true. And then Rick also put Dylan Lee on here, and I think that's fair. I think if he got more saves, I would have probably given him more luck, but just 2 saves on the season for Dylan Lee and just 9 holds, but he does have a 28% strikeout rate and a 2.37 ERA. So Rick, big fan of Dylan Lee, and his honorable mention was Alex Vesia of the Dodgers. And that's funny because I put Tanner Scott and he was just like, no, there's actually a better southpaw on the Dodgers. And I agree that Vesia is better, but there's something about the closer being selected to the All-Star game. That's usually how things go. But Vesia has a 2.86 ERA, 3 saves and 15 holds to go with a 35% strikeout rate this year. And honestly, he's been sort of an unsung hero of this bullpen that has dealt with so many injuries, and he has been healthy all year and has been pitching super well. He doesn't really care about what role he's in. Never talked to him, so I can't confirm that, but I'm assuming that he's like, hey, throw me out there whenever you need me. I'm going to get the job done. And that's what Vesia has been doing all year. And so Rick is saying honorable mention for the closer role. It looks like we've gone like 15 minutes now of getting Rick to try to join the podcast. And so I just ran through everything. So I apologize if you guys wanted to hear Rick's thoughts on those, definitely DM him on Twitter or, you know, tweet at him or, I don't know, find his email or something. Sometimes people email me and questions, so I apologize if I miss those sometimes. I'm only checking my personal email at work most of the time, and a lot of times the priority goes to my work email. So sometimes I'll accidentally skip on those, so I apologize if I miss those. But hey, feel free to email me too. I'll talk about anything outside of baseball, but I'm sure most of the people listening to this podcast aren't like, oh, you know what? I really want to talk to Jake about Pokemon. I really want to talk to Jake about One Piece or any of his other interests. I want to talk to Jake about his last haircut or something or the other. I doubt anybody's saying that, but I assume there's some people that may be itching to get a little attention from me talking myself up way too much. But I think that's going to do it for this episode of In the Pen, episode 127. You can follow Rick on Twitter at Rick Graham. You can catch all of his work over at pitcherlist.com. He posts the closing time, the holdup, and the save plus holds article every single week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and the Save Plus Hold article comes with a pitching chart or a relief pitcher chart similar to Roster Resource, but much better over on pitcherlist.com. You can check that, and you can find me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler, and you can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. I am the main co-host or the main host of the First Pitch podcast, so you can catch me live every night from Sunday through Wednesday, and then you can catch my co-host Trevor Huth on the weekends. And you can also find more of my work at Baseball HQ, where I do playing time analysis for the Giants, A's, and Diamondbacks. But sorry to end it in this fashion. I hope I did enough by myself to carry you guys through the end of this podcast. Let's hope Rick's predictions are better than mine, because I feel bad that he didn't get to back his up at all. And I just had to say, well, I think my predictions are better. But that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. We'll talk to you all next week.